Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet the University of Tulsa's Ruth Mayo Distinguished Painter, who's currently in town, an artist with Tulsa ties. Nancy Freese was a former printmaking professor at the university in the 1980s and collaborated with Gilcrease Museum in presenting exhibits of prints by Thomas Moran and Mary Nimmo Moran. Printmaking continues to be an important part of her work today, but she's better known for her large en plein air landscapes and oils and watercolors. Her work is in over 50 museum and corporate collections, including the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, the Hammer Museum at UCLA, and the Portland Art Museum. Her paintings and prints have been exhibited in over 30 solo and 170 group shows. She was elected to the National Academy and has received numerous fellowships and grants for her work. Her latest exhibit is currently on display at the Alexander Ho Gallery on the TU campus, titled Encircling Trees and Radiant Skies, which features oils, huge watercolors, as well as prints. It's on display through December 17th. The gallery opening takes place officially tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock with a lecture and reception, and then she'll give a gallery talk Friday morning at 9:30 at the Alexander Ho Gallery on the University of Tulsa campus. Nancy Freese is my guest today. Nancy Freese, welcome to Studio Tulsa, and welcome back to Tulsa. You used to be a resident of Tulsa for several years and taught at the University of Tulsa, and now back as the distinguished painter for the University of Tulsa School of Art. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a thrill to be back.
And what a beautiful show. This show documents about the last 5 to 6 years of work in a variety of mediums, and beautiful, beautiful wooded landscapes. When did that become the main part of your work? Has that always been where you came from as an artist?
Well, I did abstraction for a while, and it just didn't fit. Being out of doors was the key to my continuing in painting and printmaking, and it's all I'm interested in now. I tie the out of doors and painting and artwork very closely together, and I love to look at it in history and to experience it as a painter.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you first started doing outdoor landscapes, that was probably a time when that was considered passé, mm-hmm. or because you're not doing it in a photorealistic style, which was probably the way to do that mm-hmm. in a popular sort of trend of the time when you began doing it. What were the reactions when you say, I'm just going to go out and be a plein air painter?
That's true. Well, I was fortunate to study with some people that believed in perceptual painting on the East Coast. And that was really a revelation for me because I was very well educated in all of the arts. I came out of more abstract expressionist background and formalist. And then to be able to move right into out-of-door experience was revelatory. I studied with Gretna Campbell, who was an out-of-door landscape artist, Andrew Forge, who believed in translated nature from perception, and Gabor Pederdy, a printmaker who was just tied to nature so deeply. So I think the trifecta of those three opened the door for me, really opened the door and gave me the great foundation.
Mm-hmm. Now, has that always been your main thrust of your work, has been outdoor plein air?
Outdoors since mm-hmm. since graduate school.
Now, when you lived in Tulsa, were you traipsing around?
Out of doors.
Where did you paint around here?
I painted on the Gilcrease Museum grounds for 3 solid years. You know, I'd drive my car out with a big canvas on top. I paint in the back or in the front or the side. I did prints out there. I painted on the Philbrook grounds. I rented from the school on South Gary Place. I painted on my front porch. I painted everywhere I could. And then often, the good thing about teaching at the University of Tulsa is they were so supportive of the arts. And I got faculty development grants in the summer to go to different places and paint. So they were just very, very supportive of it. I painted around Phillips Hall. Mm-hmm. Anywhere I could, I'd paint.
Now, in this show, this is, I assume, most of this work is from where you live now in Rhode Island. And the Rhode Island landscape, it is a dense wooded landscape for the most part. Mm-hmm. What is special about that particular landscape?
Trees, all my landscapes have no people. And so I often think about that because I think it allows a more philosophical space for the viewer. In a way, the trees are the you know, stand parallel to the people. So I love the vertical stance. I love the solidity of horizontal vertical relationships and how you can move through space with that. But you're right. I also paint in North Dakota in the summers. I have a place there, my grandfather's homestead. And I paint shelter belts or the cottonwood groves. So I'm drawn to that. It's difficult. It's difficult to paint without trees. It's much harder.
Yeah. And I would assume this is a sort of a, your shelter belt. You're talking about like a little belt line where they have a set of trees fields,
right.
Basically as
mm-hmm.
an erosion barrier.
Right. And they're disappearing.
And so this is like prairie, basically.
It's
farmland.
Farmland, flatland. It's along the Red River, so it's similar to, in a way similar to this, some rolling hills, but mainly flat. I love to paint skies, though, too. So there's a combination of sky, and which is very difficult because it's fast moving and you have to make real composites of skies to work. So skies and trees, if you get those two together, you're having everything moving and everything solid.
You say a quick composite. Is that just because conditions change and you're trying to capture a moment?
Basically, all of landscape painting is a composite. You go out, even Monet, Constable, Turner, they all went out into nature. Gretna Campbell, Susan Shatner, all of the great landscape painters go out into the elements and work for a period of time, even if it's exact conditions, the exact same time of day. Your responsibility as an artist is to gather this together and recreate it. So it's not, I don't want to downgrade the word depiction, but it's a gathering of experiences into one element, into a still element, the painting.
Mm-hmm. And it's a compilation of all these moments mm-hmm. where the light is constantly changing, and you have to sort of pick a light, don't you?
Mm-hmm. You get a little one day, a little the next day, and you assemble it probably according to your emotive needs, you know, your own persona. I think that's how it works. You get yourself in there, too.
Now, I'm gathering that most of the pieces in this show at the Alexander Hogue Gallery are from Rhode Island, but I'm wondering if there's a set of etchings called Tumbling Time that are from North Dakota.
That's right. They're
there's a solitary cottonwood mm-hmm. tree. There's another of a small little pond. Mm-hmm. There's a slough,
yep.
A backwater probably on the Red River.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's yeah. all from on-site. I primarily did those. I coated a copper plate, and then I could sit in my car and draw them. So I'd go out to the preserves, which didn't have necessarily benches or anything, and I could actually go to the, you know, draw from my car. And I did those over
many. So you did etchings plein air.
Mm-hmm. I do all of my work out of doors.
Really?
So I take.
Now, is that unusual for a printmaker to do that?
It is. There's actually a Tolson, John Arthur, a critic and author. He's from Tulsa. Is percolating idea to put five of us together that do have several that are deceased, but there's five printmakers who did all of their work out of doors. And so I do, when I draw on the woodcut, I draw on site. And when I draw on the linocut, cut, I draw on site. And when I draw on the copper plate, I draw on site.
Now, a lot of artists, it's about maybe painting a sketch, coming back to the studio and making an etching, but that's not how you work at all.
I just don't do very well in that. I have.
What about the idea of creating a painting and an etching at the same time of the same material? Are all of your work singular in the fact that an etching is an etching and it's not going to show up as a painting?
Or? It's very, very astute to ask that because that is the way I work, and it's a little out of maybe the tradition of reproductive printmaking where you do a print of a painting. Or you do a print of, you look at a photograph, you do a print of a photograph. My paintings and prints aren't in any order. It's not the painting first and then the print. It can go any direction just on what I want to do.
But you will make a painting and maybe an etching later. Or,
of the same site, yeah. But not of the painting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so they may look similar, but they're still done on site. I love the out of doors. If I can get out of doors, I'm happy, and if I can do art, I'm happy. So this is the perfect combination.
Now, one of the things that's really interesting about your work when you're working plein air, when we think of plein air, we think of maybe as large as you know, 24 by 36 or, mm-hmm. you know, some manageable canvas size. You're talking about 72 inches wide, huge horizontal mm-hmm. paintings, huge vertical paintings, mm-hmm. 90 inches right. in some cases.
Right.
What is that like to work outdoors when you have basically a huge wind sail?
Well, it's hard, because Rhode Island's along the coast, so you do get the winds there. But the large oil paintings I tied to the division of my car from the front and the back, that I'm a little lost for what that's called. So I tie the big painting there and paint against the car. So I have to find a site. Finding a site is the most difficult place for large scale. That's the clue. The painting isn't as difficult as finding the site. It has to be protected. You can't be interrupted by people on a constant flow. You have to feel safe. You have to actually be able to park fairly closely so you can carry things back and forth rapidly. You don't want to spend most of your time carrying things and less time painting. So the watercolors are really easy. That's why one of the reasons I started doing watercolors, because it was so portable and it was in between the oils and the prints to me. So the watercolors, large scale, I roll and then I paint and I unroll and I paint. And I actually don't get to see so much of what I've done until I'm back in the studio and look at it.
Oh, so it's sort of a unveiling process when you get back.
And the diptychs, I've been doing quite a few series of diptych oil paintings. I paint separately, and then I come back and look at them together. So I don't actually get to ever paint the painting out of doors totally.
Mm. Now, you mentioned the watercolors, and I really think in this exhibition, the watercolors are the stars. Mm-hmm. When I first saw them, I said, wow, those are really nice oils. And then I get up closer, and I'm going, oh my gosh, these are watercolors. Uh-huh. And they have such a lustrousness that I don't associate with watercolor, that mm. they have that glow that you expect to see from an oil painting. Mm. And so kudos for that. But
thank you.
But these are also such large watercolors. We're talking huge horizontal pieces, huge vertical pieces, November riverbank, September on the Lieutenant River, August trees and lake light. And again, these are... you were talking about how when you were in Tulsa, you were sort of painting on sort of manicured, like Philbrook grounds mm-hmm. and Gilcrease grounds. No, these are wild landscapes with, mm-hmm. All sorts of overgrown weeds and bushes and trees that haven't been trimmed. And
that's right.
And it's just a really wonderful wild uh-huh. landscape.
The urban wild is more wild than you think, mm-hmm. actually, if you go into certain places. I do like manicured grounds. I've painted on grounds and arboretums, gardens and arboretums. And I like that because the cues of the landscape architects that lay that out are exactly the cues I need to make a painting.
They're about viewing them, right?
That's right. So uh-huh. It's very serviceable and really charged paint in designed grounds. It's such a pleasure. But the urban wild, or even the rural wild, is also wonderful. It's a little riskier. You know what's going to happen. No, you never know if your painting is going to be there the next day. I painted a tree for 5 years, one tree, and then one day I went and it was gone. Somebody had chopped it down. So that was the end of that series. But and also, there's animals out there when you're in the country. And one time I was surrounded by wild turkeys.
Wow.
Totally, because I was painting so quietly. It was total quietude. And just with my hand, it was a medium-sized canvas. It wasn't with the arm where I do the larger ones, that turkeys just walked right up and surrounded me.
Well, that would be an interesting painting in and of itself,
yes.
But that's not your
no,
work.
No, somebody else can paint that, right?
Yeah. No, but these watercolors, they have such detail in them. And then, of course, when you get up close to them, you say, oh, well, yes, these are watercolors. And I'm not sure if it's the dimension of them, because they're so large that we don't expect to see watercolors of that
yeah.
scale, that you're looking at it from further back and all your eye fills mm-hmm. in all the detail.
But it's also the body of the paint is pretty densely applied. It's
yes.
not gouache, but it's many, many layers, so that it does mimic or reference oil painting. And, you know, I do like the historical watercolor artists that use watercolor more densely, so that you feel like you know the texture, but there is no texture. So it's a little bit of a paradox.
And it's also your eye sort of fills in that
that's
texture.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, watercolor is an interesting medium. People think you can only go one direction because they think that you can only add. You're getting rid of the white. You can only add, but you actually can go backwards and forwards by scrubbing, sanding, washing out areas. There's a painting in the show called Three Trees, and I had a very dark sky, and it just didn't represent what I wanted, so I put it in the bathtub and washed it all away, and then went out the next day, and the remnant of the old sky is under there, so it worked perfectly for making the sky I did make.
Interesting.
So the watercolor is pretty adaptable. It the longer I've worked in it, the more I realize it's similar to oils. You can go forward and backwards.
My guest today is Nancy Friese, a painter, the distinguished painter for the University of Tulsa's School of Art. Her exhibit, Encircling Trees and Radiant Skies, is on display now through December 17th, and she'll be giving a gallery talk and an opening tomorrow evening at the Alexander Hogue Gallery on the TU campus. And also lecturing on Friday morning as well.
Right.
And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, now, watercolor, from what I understand, you sort of came late to watercolor.
That's right.
How did you end up picking up watercolor?
It's strange. I actually didn't like watercolor and never imagined myself using it because I like the body of oil paint and the texture of the prints that I do. They're mostly deeply textured, too. There was a studio, a very famous printmaker named Fritz Eichenberg, and he died and his wife died, and they opened a studio so artists could come in and pick up their remaining supplies. And I picked up watercolors. And so then they were German-made watercolors, and they were very good quality. So those were my first watercolors sometime in the late 90s. And I did watercolors for woodcuts first. I just went out thinking I'm going to make a woodcut of this. So they were kind of like puzzles. And then they just grew on me over the years. So I like the fact that the paint disappears immediately. And then it's sucked into the water, into the paper immediately. So it's a very interesting way of painting if it's just sucked up. Right, and I use very good quality paper, and it's hot pressed, so it is highly absorbent, not textured.
So when you're out working, do you have your oils? Do you have your watercolors? Do you have some plates all handy, and it's like whatever strikes your fancy?
Well, whatever site I'm at, usually I don't. It's a matter of concentration. Being an artist or any person in the arts knows that success or production is based on concentration. And so I go out, and however I can promote my concentration level, then I'm able to achieve something. So if I can concentrate 3 hours on oil painting, that may be the maximum at one time. And then maybe I'll have a later afternoon etching. I can concentrate, different type of concentration. Mm-hmm. To use that. So if you alter what your concentration quality is or some variety of that, you can work longer. I think that's why artists try different medias. They do collage and then they do painting or they do video and it requires a different mental state. So even those mediums that are close together require different types of concentration.
And I assume it keeps you fresh, so you're looking at
absolutely
the material freshly based on your medium and
that's
the fact
right.
that I haven't pulled out those oils in a while.
That's right. You can look down and look up, and it's all new again, right?
Now, some of the big oils in the show document, a place that you've been working at for a while. It's called the Avondale Farm Preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that's in Rhode Island as well.
That's in southern Rhode Island. It's a Nature Conservancy Land Trust through Westerly Land Trust Council.
Mm-hmm.
And I painted for 5 years. They gave me a bank, an entire bank as a studio, empty bank. And then I painted on their variety of land trusts. So one of them was Avondale Farm Preserve, which had prairies and trees and was near the coast with some stone walls, fences, great for birding, and it was very private. So I could paint big, and I could paint over a duration. The large-scale paintings took 2 years because I needed 2 falls and 2 winters to complete them.
Uh-huh.
The prints, Tumbling Time, that to get the etchings on site drawn enough with small enough lines, it took 2 seasons to do those, and then another 2 seasons for the author to write the text.
Yeah, write the text for it. Yeah.
So it's the older I get, the longer I can take on a piece. Actually, it's
and here
more
we thought plain air painters turned it out in a day.
No, it's the longer you can stay with it, the more powerful for me it is, the more enjoyable it is for me.
So what do you get from it, from looking at something over a season as opposed to a day or maybe even a week for this?
Well, the main thing is in painting, you discover more color. The longer you're out there, you are able to understand the color range of the world, the tones of the world, how they work together, and it's fascinating to deconstruct that and reconstruct it as an artist. And that you get over time.
Well, and the other thing, your eye tells your brain what colors you're supposed to be seeing, too. And so you sort of have to untrain your brain.
That's right.
Because your brain wants similarity. It wants normal. And the whole thing is when you're looking at an intense colored landscape, it takes a while to look, to mm-hmm. actually see that color. And that's what shows up in these paintings, because I think if people took a first glance at your work, they would say, well, these colors are heightened than they mm-hmm. really are. And what you're saying is, no, I have to stare for a while to actually see this
right.
color.
They're revealed color, because color is out there and it's by relationship. So if you're looking at one part of a landscape and it's a green tree next to a russet grass, that green is going to be different than the other side of the green tree. We know it's all green, but that's considered local color. That's how we, as painters, call it local color. And then express color, or, I'd say express color that comes through the artist and through it revealed through perception is another color completely. You can see it once you've been high, everybody should go take one art class, because the world is revealed differently when you've promoted your visual knowledge. And that is maybe that we don't say that enough in the world, in our educational institutions, that richness and enjoyment and secrets are revealed if you learn how to enjoy your vision.
My guest today is Nancy Friese. You can see her work at the Alexander Hogue Gallery, Encircling Trees and Radiant Skies, work from Rhode Island and North Dakota, beautiful plein air landscapes in oil, watercolor, as well as prints that are done in plein air as well. And I have to ask about some etchings that are some of your most recent work. There are a set of mm-hmm. etchings from last year. Mm-hmm. I think they're called Pathway. There's another one called Night Skies, which mm-hmm. has a set of trees, and then there's just a little opening for the night stars mm-hmm. to show through, Copse and Reflections. Now, to me, those particular etchings look different than your other etchings, and I'm wondering if they're going to be paintings at some point, or that was just struck you as a time to make an etching.
No, they aren't going to be paintings. I was doing those prints the same time I was doing the long, the 120-inch watercolors. So I was doing the watercolors outside, and then later in the afternoon or morning I was doing those etchings. And they're I tend to work in series, so I like to do a series of 5 the same size or 4. Or right now I'm working on, they're not in the show, but a series of 3 75-inch woodcuts.
Wow, 75-inch woodcuts.
Yeah. And so that was a series I did over a month, actually, mostly over a month. And they won't be paintings. No, I won't paint those. I liked them because I could do them on site. It was at a residency. I wasn't interrupted. And they're, three of the four have soft ground, which is where you put a soft surface, soft waxy surface over copper, and you put a piece of newspaper, newsprint over top and draw through it. So it makes it look very soft, like a drawing. So that was what I was doing there, trying to enjoy that medium and trying to figure out that scale, which I hadn't done on prints on before. Yeah. But I did do a whole series, and I'm very interested in continuing a series of encircling trees where whether a shape is revealed through the trees or under the leaves or under the branches and under the trees, how that is manifested. We all stand in those places and look outwards, and I would like to do more on that.
And I think a couple of those etchings have that quality in the mm-hmm. night stars, where you have this hole in the canopy where you're looking mm-hmm. up at the stars, and then reflections is a pond, but mm-hmm. it's totally enveloped by surrounding right. brush and trees.
Right. Uh-huh.
And one of the things I notice about your etchings is they're so dense, as far as, like, you know, all the trees, all the limbs, all the leaves, mm-hmm. all the weeds, and they're just, it's like you're walking through a thicket in some of them.
That's right. That one pathway was to get through that was it was an adventure experience, because it was also had rocks on the ground. I like that, and to have you see it. Maybe it's the animistic view of nature, where everything is alive, every part talks to the other part, and the texture. You can get the texture out very nicely in printmaking. So that interests me, and entryways through nature, pathway, that's a very easy way of getting you through foreground, middle ground, and distant ground, so you can have a pathway. It's a method. A lot of what I do in printmaking and etching is similar from the historical view, the single tree examined, foreground, middle ground, distant ground, explained through looking outwards. So they're tropes from other times, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we wish you great success with your work, and welcome back to Tulsa, and hope a lot of people come out and see the show at the Alexander Hogue Gallery, which will be on display through December 17th. Painter, artist, and printmaker Nancy Freese is my guest today. She is the University of Tulsa's Ruth Mayo Distinguished Painter. An exhibit of her work entitled Encircling Trees and Radiant Skies is on display at the Alexander Hogue Gallery through December 17th. The official gallery opening is tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock with a lecture in Phillips Hall and a reception to follow. She'll also give a gallery talk Friday morning at 9:30 at the Alexander Hogue Gallery on the University of Tulsa campus. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.